the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The digital media are all around us. Social networking is a fact of nature, it almost seems these days. It's certainly a fact of adolescence and young adulthood. Jeffrey Zaslow, writing in the Wall Street Journal, his column Moving On, calls this generation the greatest generation, he says, of networkers. Now, his interest is primarily about the impact of social networking and social media on the workers in the next generation. He's looking at teenagers and young adults today, and he's asking questions about how well they're going to be able to function in the workplace as they are addicted, well, perhaps that's not the right word, almost constantly connected to social networking sites. A couple of interesting things. I'm not primarily interested in what this means for the business world. I will tell you that is interesting. When you have employers trying to figure out what do you do with a generation of new employees who tend to check their social networking sites, their Twitter feed. They tend to check especially their text messaging on their cell phones and PDAs several times an hour, and some of them several times a minute. It's a very interesting question. I wrote an article on this today at albertmohler.com, and as you go to the article, you'll find it talking about a hyper-socialized generation. My main interest is what it means not just to the work habits, or for that matter, even to the educational prospects of the young, but what it means to their souls. What does it mean to be so deeply embedded in these socially networked media, in these new technologies, that there's no time for reflection? What happens when our communication is literally reduced to 140 characters? There's a lot at stake here. We're going to be talking about it today. And let me just tell you, in a word of absolute candor and honesty, this article that prompted my article is primarily about teens and 20-somethings, but the reality is that the questions about social media are for all of us, because this is one of the situations in which, the little one shall lead us. The young literally are creating a social tsunami that is including just about everyone, and I've got to admit to you right up front, I say this in my article, as soon as the tires of the airplane hit the tarmac, I've got on my iPhone, I feel irresponsible not to be connected. Just how connected do we have to be? Or to ask it the other way, how disconnected should we be if we're actually going to do some of the things, think some of the thoughts, build some of the relationships we really do need to build and nurture? This is an issue that is clearly focused on the younger generation because they are so deeply embedded in this media that, as Jeffrey Zaslow says, they are the hyper-socialized generation. When we come back to talk about this in just a few minutes, I'm going to share with you just a couple of interesting angles on this. It ought to catch the attention of parents, teachers, educators, pastors, youth ministers, just about anyone who really cares about the generation coming. But it ought to say also, this is a conversation that's not just about young people, it's about all of us. This is a challenge that's going to come to every single connected person. And if you're not connected, well, you're probably not listening to this program. For those of us who are, let's face it, questions of balance and boundaries, they're pretty big. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And we'll be getting to that conversation in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news. We're all still hearing about the aftermath of the murderous rampage at Fort Hood, Texas, yesterday. We now know some facts that we did not know yesterday. But honestly, the last 24 hours have demonstrated very little to us that is new. It is now known to us that Major Nidal Malik Hassan opened fire there at Fort Hood in a facility in which persons are getting ready for deployment. He himself, we are now told, was facing an almost imminent deployment. We don't know all that was going on. We do know that he is still alive, even as he is gravely injured. He is alive, and we are told that he's in a stable situation. He's unconscious. He's unable to be interrogated. But when he is conscious, you can count on the fact there are a lot of questions that are going to be addressed to the major. A physician, we now know. It looks like there were some troubling signs in the background. But the interesting thing last night, to me, looking at what was being talked about in the media, was how quick persons were to jump to questions that might suggest that he does not actually bear responsibility for what he did. That's a very interesting impulse. And one of the things we should note is that we're really the first generation to jump to that kind of moral evasion. It's very interesting. Look at the history of law. You look at the history of preaching, the history of moral culture, and you'll discover that in almost every civilization, at almost every point, when someone does something, the cultural assumption is that they are responsible for having done it. When it's a volitional act, they are assumed to have been responsible for having done it. What we now face in the United States, and this tells you something about the triumph of the therapeutic. It tells you something about our proclivity to moral evasion. I'm not suggesting that there is never a case to be made for diminished capacity. I'm not suggesting that there is no such thing as psychosis. There is no such thing as a psychological or psychiatric complication here or background. I am saying that it ought to tell us something, that much of the conversation that has gone over the past 24 hours is over responsibility, which is the one question most persons in human history, and certainly those who have been a part of the unfolding of the Christian-influenced civilization in the West, that's the one question that heretofore generally never been asked. Other issues in the news are very, very interesting. Cover story in The Economist this week shows a baby in free fall. Don't worry. He's got a smile on his face. The story is about falling fertility, not falling babies. But it does catch your eye. The subtitle of the cover story is How the Population Problem is Solving Itself. We're going to be talking about this. What you have is another reminder to us that many of the naysayers, especially those with their Malthusian concerns about the population explosion, they're just shown to have been wrong. They were shown to be wrong in two very dramatic ways. The first way they were shown to be wrong is with the effects of a growing population. Now, we were warned by people such as the Ehrlichs, Paul Ehrlich in particular, in his book, The Population Explosion and the Population Bomb, all this kind of thing. We were told back in the 70s that there would be world famine before the end of the 20th century if the human population reached a certain stage. It actually reached an even larger number, and there was no widespread increase in famine. But we were also told that population growth is inevitable. And now appears that that is certainly not the case. Falling birth rates in much of the world, starting first in Northern and Central Europe, spreading to other English-speaking portions of the world, and now even in much of the developing world, you have falling birth rates. The Economist says, not from a worldview perspective, simply from a demographic, numbers-on-the-ground perspective, that the population problem is solving itself. Now, we're going to be talking about this in coming days because, of course, so far as we're concerned from a Christian worldview, it's never just about demographics. And it's certainly not just about population. It's about how we understand human beings. And it's about whether or not we value every single human being and every single member of the human community. It's about how birth rates and what demographers call natality, how this really demonstrates what's going on in the heart of a people and in the heart of a civilization. We'll be talking about that in coming days. But as you see that cover story in The Economist, no, it really is a big story. At my website at albertmiller.com, I posted a couple of articles that you may want to note. The first of them is on Muslim creationists and Western elites. Really, really interesting. You may have noticed over the last couple of weeks, several major newspapers have been doing big reports on the fact that there are Muslim creationists. It seems to be a shock to many in the Western media that the vast majority of the millions of Muslims in this world do not believe in evolutionary theory. Now, I begin my article pointing out that every single human being is embedded in a complex of culture, language, relationships, and all the rest. And what we see as normal is really a product of our perception from within that embedded social location. Now, it's very easy for us to see how someone else's misperception of normal really can trip them up. It's much easier to see that in someone else than in ourselves. But when we're speaking about anyone, whether it is ourselves or someone else, we recognize it takes a lot of intellectual energy, actually, to get out of that intellectual cage in order to check, to make certain that our perceptions are not just rooted in what we see around us and take as normal that isn't at all normative for the rest of the world. So what's the point here? The point here is that the theory of evolution is actually held by a very thin demographic slice of Western intellectuals. That's basically it. If you go across the world and look at it, that doesn't mean, by the way, it's true or false just on that basis. The demography does not indicate truth. Truth is not a majority or a minority position. We talk about evolution a lot on this program. The issue here is that that what you're really looking at is that naturalistic form of evolution, which insists that there is no creator, no designer. Well, it's held by a very, very thin slice, and for good reason. I have to say, as a Christian theologian, it's held by very few people for a very good reason. And that is, it falls flat on its face. As a Christian, I know that from the scriptures, but I also know that because God has embedded the knowledge of himself as creator all around us, and it just so happens that Is this really a surprise to anyone? The vast majority of Muslims are not evolutionists? Who would have thought that it would have been otherwise? The same thing is true, by the way, for almost all the peoples of the earth. The only people who are really hardwired in terms of their absolute defense of naturalistic evolutionary theory, you're talking about people in a very thin slice of humanity, but they are continually shocked. I remember reading Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times, who was shocked to find out there are more people in America who believe in the virgin birth than in evolution, and he wondered if he was living among sane people. I want to say to Mr. Kristof and to those in the media who have just discovered Muslim creationists, guys, do you get out much? We'll be back to talk about social media and its challenges. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Jeffrey Zaslow's article in the Washington Post. No, it's in the Wall Street Journal. Excuse me. It's in their Invaluable Personal Journal section there in the Wall Street Journal in his Moving On column. He begins with this anecdote. You're going to want to hear this. And in fact, you're going to have a hard time forgetting this once you hear it. I read directly from the article. He says, a 17-year-old boy caught sending text messages in class was recently sent to the vice principal's office at Millwood High School in Halifax, Nova Scotia. The vice principal, Steve Gallagher, told the boy he needed to focus on the teacher, not his cell phone. The boy listened politely and nodded, and that's when Mr. Gallagher noticed the student's fingers moving on his lap. He was texting while being reprimanded for texting. Quote, it was a subconscious act, says Mr. Gallagher, who took the phone away. Young people today are connected socially from the moment they open their eyes in the morning until they close their eyes at night. It's compulsive, end quote. Actually, Mr. Gallagher, I have to correct, I think it's worse than you think. It's not just that they are connected from the moment they open their eyes in the morning until they close their eyes at night. One recent research project indicates that a frightening number of adolescents and young adults sleep with the cell phone by them on the pillow, lest they miss an important text message in the night. We're talking about a generation that is so digital that they are creating a new form of human relatedness. They are now being referred to as the hyper-socialized generation. Mr. Gallagher, that is the assistant principal at Millwood High School in Halifax, Nova Scotia, speaking of children and high school age kids in particular, and then young adults going through college, he speaks very perceptively about the educational challenges. How in the world do you teach students who are constantly checking their email, their text messages, their Facebook page, and all the rest? Mr. Zaslow writes, educators are also being asked by parents, students, and educational strategists to reconsider their rules. In past generations, students got in trouble for passing notes in class. Now students are adept at texting with their phones still in their pockets, says Mr. Gallagher. By the way, he's 40, which makes us very, very old in this. And they're able to communicate with someone one floor down and three rows over. Students are just as fundamentally different today. They will take suspensions rather than give up their phones. Isn't that interesting? Students say, I can't live without my phone. Suspend me. Mr. Gallagher, by the way, ends with the statement, it's like talking to kids about why they don't need air. He says, if you talk to them about why they actually don't need their cell phone during the hours they're in class, they say, he gets looks as if he has just told them they do not need oxygen. Really interesting stuff. I hope parents are listening particularly, and let me just remind you of what we talk about on this program all the time. You are the gatekeepers. You are the rule makers. It is your responsibility to protect your children from giving themselves completely over to this hyper-socialization. There are gains and losses with this. There are a lot of gains and losses. I have to say, as an educator and as a theologian, as a father, and for that matter, as a 50-year-old with an iPhone, armed and dangerous with digital technology, I understand just how seductive this can be. And furthermore, it's not just seductive. If I am not engaged in the kind of relatedness that seems to be my responsibility now, I feel irresponsible if I'm disconnected. If, for instance, I do not turn my iPhone on the moment the wheels of the plane hit the tarmac, I feel like I might be letting someone down. I might be missing something I really need to respond to. something might be going on, I'm supposed to know, and the others are depending on me knowing. And then there is the social relatedness. And I have to tell you, you know, the interesting thing here is how this is going upwards in the age spectrum. We've got increasing numbers of grandparents on Facebook. We've got a lot of middle-aged people who are tweeting. And for those of you who do not understand, that is the verb form of the process by which you post on Twitter. By the way, 2 years ago, we didn't even know that we could tweet, and there was no Twitter on which to tweet. Now it has become an imperative. And if you're in business or in institutional life or in ministry, if you're trying to reach people, if you're trying to communicate with people, well, there you are. You're in the Twitter sphere. Then you're also here and there and just about everywhere. One of the most recent articles that really caught my eye with a kind of twist of irony was about how email has become so old school. Just a matter of 2 or 3 years ago, we were talking about the snail mail giving way to the email. And by the way, that is happening and is a process that is continuing. But email now seems so old school. Much of the debate in this article, and Jeffrey Zaslow of the Wall Street Journal has done a good job with this article, pointing out how business executives are trying to figure out how to relate to this generation. How do you supervise people and hold them accountable for actually doing the job you've hired them to do while they are also checking their text messages, constantly monitoring their digital media, and going every few minutes, if not every few seconds, to check this out in constant relatedness? There are gains and losses, according to those who are observing. For instance, in terms of gains, you have someone like Ben Bajarin. He's, by the way, 32, so he's old, too. He argues that because young people are adept at multimedia socializing, their social skills are actually strengthened. You've also got people trying to argue that these young people are now natural, native multitaskers. They can do many things at once. Older people have a very difficult time with this. Young people, they say, can do it. I guess there's no more graphic illustration of that than the 17-year-old boy who was texting while he's being reprimanded for texting, and as his principal said, he wasn't even thinking about it. That's just the way they do it. And I'm sure it's a skill, by the way. I'm just going to concede this right up front. I'm sure it is a skill to be able to text message with a cell phone from your pocket while you're sitting in a classroom. I'll just go ahead and concede that. I'll just go ahead and acknowledge that's a skill. Let's just stipulate that. But I'm not going to believe that it's really an important life skill. But then again, it makes me wonder how many executives maybe in boring meetings are also doing the equivalent with their cell phone or PDA or whatever. The negative side, you have PM Forney of the Civility Institute at Johns Hopkins University, who is pointing out the obvious, and that is that there is a lot of hyper-socialization going on, there's a lot of communication, there's a lot of text messaging and all the rest. But to quote the last sentence of his pretty severe indictment, he says, there is a lot of communication going on that is futile and trivial. Well, yeah. In fact, there's a lot of it that doesn't even achieve anything worthy of being called futile and trivial. But it's out there. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. If you can tear yourself away from text messaging for just a moment, give me a call. Old media. It's a phone. Dial the number, 877-893-8255. Then again, if you can't tear yourself away from that, go ahead, email me. That's mail@albertmoeller.com, or send me a tweet, Twitter/Albert Moeller and Moeller Radio. That's two different accounts. And then, of course, the Facebook page, the Albert Moeller Program, which is to say, I'm admitting we're a part of the problem, or maybe a part of the solution. You help us figure it out. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let me just say that for Christians, I think there is a big issue here. We really are in a generation that is learning. If you're going to call this an achievement, let's just admit it. We're learning to communicate in 140 characters or less. We're learning to stay constantly in contact. We're having more relatedness than ever before. What does this do to our souls? Where's the space for prayer? Where is the opportunity for reflection? Are we really allowing these social media technologies to prevent or to impede our developing relationships in flesh and blood? Interesting questions. Love to hear from you. Tell me what you're thinking. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Moeller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Craig Watkins has written the book entitled The Young and the Digital, What the Migration to Social Network Sites, Games, and Anytime, Anywhere Media Means for Our Future. I love the title, The Young and the Digital. Of course, I feel for Mr. Watkins because his book is dated. Of course, you're writing about this particular kind of technology is dated by the time you finish the manuscript, not to mention when the book actually hits the bookstores. But it's pretty relevant. Talks a great deal about Facebook in particular. And one of the interesting quotes in here has to do with the impact of this revolution in reaching the young by politicians. Meredith Siegel, founder of Students for Barack Obama, was talking about the approach of the Obama campaign in the year 2007 and then the year 2008 to reaching young people. And she just said, quote, young people are on the web. That's how we're organizing. It's interesting that in reaching young people for the Obama campaign, digital media was strategy number one. It turns out it was also strategy number two. That was the whole strategy. Because that, they argue, is simply where they are. Not every American, but the younger you go in the demographic, the more true this is. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to get to some of the deeper issues related to this and some suggestions about boundaries. And yet I'm trying to think this through. I hope you'll help us to think it through. Give us a call, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Grove City, Ohio. David's listening on the web. Go ahead, David.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mohler. Thank you for your program. I'm a pastor of a local church, and we're having a significant problem with our teenagers texting during the worship services. We have done our best to stop it, but it's amazing how insulted the teenagers get when you look at them and say, give me your cell phone until the service is over with. They act like you've just asked to take their right arm from them.
Well, maybe that's next, David. I really appreciate your concern for this. And I can imagine the looks on those faces. I really can, because we see similar things. As an educator, I can tell you in the classroom, when we say to college students, you know, turn off the cell phone. Don't bring it out. I don't want to see a cell phone. That's pretty tough. And by the way, most of them have laptops in front of them. So, you know, if they want to cheat, at least in the classroom, and scoot around these rules, they can often do it. And if they are, and my own kids told me this, but now I've seen it documented in the Wall Street Journal, that there are kids that can text from a cell phone in their pocket. My goodness. We're in a different day. That's an interesting cultural adaptation. David, I hope you're still with me. I want to ask you a question. Have you seen these churches that are suggesting that people tweet about the sermon during the sermon?
I've just read about it online. It's not something I would recommend. I would think people would want to be more focused on what's being said from God's Word than what they can get out to other people. So I've just read about it online. I don't think it's helpful for the gospel. I don't think it's helpful in learning what the pastor's teaching that Sunday. So I would say stay focused in on what he's saying and what the work of the Holy Spirit is, and turn your cell phone off.
David, that's good advice. I appreciate that. I just want to say, in all honesty, I kind of understand why people would feel the need to do that. Because you see something, you hear something that's really remarkable, catches your attention, and the next thing you know, you want to share it with someone. And, you know, in this digital age, the way a lot of folks just immediately decide to share is by Twitter or by Facebook or by text messaging. You just choose the medium. I'll tell you, I understand the seduction of it. I really, really do. And I also understand how difficult it is to put things in place and in perspective. And this is not a finger-pointing program where we're saying, look at those hyper-socialized young people. I think they are a mirror in which we see ourselves. If we're not as adept at it yet, and we're not as hyper-socialized, it's not because we're morally superior. It's because we're kind of behind the curve. Maybe behind the curve is not a bad place, though. You know, David, calling from Grove City, the pastor says, turn it off and listen to the preacher. Well, then you heard Steve Gallagher, the vice principal, tell the 17-year-old, turn it off, listen to the teacher. I wonder how many of us can actually turn it off and in prayer and devotion listen to God and read the Bible and meditate upon the Word of God by memorizing and planting that Word in our hearts. By the way, it's longer than 140 characters. It's longer than a post. And you can't text some of the most important things in life, including the movings of the heart instructed by Scripture. This is really, really tough stuff. I think what we are talking about here is one of the long-term conversations that Christians are going to have. The urgency here is really directed to parents, because you better be in control. I guess we better be in control of our own social media use before we talk to our kids. But when it comes to parental responsibility, you know, it shouldn't be the vice principal that has to tell our kids that they're out of line when they're text messaging during class. And it shouldn't be the preacher that has to say that the teenagers in the church shouldn't be text messaging during church. I have to wonder, parents, where in the world are you? Hopefully not on the other end of the phone. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Putting digital media and social media into perspective and context, listen, that's a very difficult thing. And the article by Jeffrey Zaslow in the Wall Street Journal really talks about how the younger generation is finding difficulty putting it in perspective. As a matter of fact, many of them don't even know that there is a perspective problem that shows their perspective problem. When you got a 17-year-old who's texting while he's being reprimanded by the principal for texting, well, you've got an issue going on there. And that's exactly what's going on. Stephen Gallagher, that particular vice principal, said, look, these kids think when you tell them they don't need their cell phone or text messaging for a few hours, think you've just told them they don't need oxygen. It's that nonsensical to them. And the most amazing statement in this article, the one that caught me by surprise, is where he said they would rather be suspended than give up their phones. They'll just take the suspension. Now, that's a different world than the world I can imagine. But then again, I realize just how dependent I am in my 50th year on this kind of social media. And I think this is a trend that is migrating upward on the age scale. The problem is not just young adults. They're showing us the problem that all of us face when it comes to social media, putting it in perspective, especially from a Christian worldview perspective, to understand that, as Jacques Ellul and so many others have taught us through the years, every technology comes with a soul price. Every technology comes with certain seductions. It comes offering certain benefits, no doubt about it, but with those benefits come impact on the soul. And when it comes to the social media, oh, just look at how relatedness has now become far easier. And some of it is just absolutely wonderful. Listeners to this program, I want to thank you for connecting with us through Facebook and through Twitter and other means. I want to thank you for that. That's been a real encouragement to me. We have people from all over the world who are connected to us that we would never be able to meet. And we get some of the best feedback on this program. I get some of the best feedback from my preaching and teaching and messages by means of social media. I find out things and keep connected with people that otherwise, that information would just never be shared. But there is a downside. And the downside is a cost not only to the calendar but to the soul. Let's go to the phones. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Listening on WFIA is Stacy. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. Albert, this is Stacy. I am a dental hygienist here in Louisville, Kentucky, and our school systems were out today, and I had several teenagers in my practice, and today I couldn't even clean one of the girls' teeth sufficiently because she's texting and taking pictures and putting them on Facebook while I'm cleaning her teeth.
Okay, you think you've heard it all, Stacy, and you've proved that you can't ever hear it all. That's today. Now, let me just ask you, was there a mom or a dad anywhere in proximity to this?
The mother sitting in the next chair over, and I know she heard me a couple times say, sweetie, I need to see. I have sharp instruments here. Can you move your phone?
Okay, I have to tell you, Stacy, when a dental hygienist says, you got sharp instruments, I'm already feeling the fear over here. If that doesn't get the attention of a teenager, I don't know what will. God bless you. I really appreciate the call, and I appreciate your clarification about mom. And let me just point out, I hope every single parent feels the bite of that. That there was a parent sitting right there and either not seeing the problem or having insufficient will to solve the problem. And that makes the parent part of the problem. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Stacy, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Salem, Virginia. Linda's listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I think intellectual development of young people is being affected as well as their spiritual development. Their thinking is fragmented. They have difficulty focusing. They can't sustain a logical sequence of thought. And I think part of this is due to the texting and social media.
You know, and Linda, I think that is an excellent point. It's one that's really brought out in this article, but it's also brought out just by common sense. And as a very thoughtful point, I really do appreciate it. That's the kind of point that's difficult actually to make in 140 characters and in nanoseconds. It takes some reflection to think about what you're talking about. I was talking to an educator the other day who mentioned to me, especially talking about adolescent boys, he said, here's the deal. He said, part of it is just being boys. The whole thing about ADHD and ADD and attention deficit disorders and all the rest. Part of it is just being boys. He said, another part of it is the multitasking that these kids try to do. He said, frankly, they are trying to do more. He said, when I did my homework, I wasn't allowed to have the TV on. I wasn't allowed to have music on. I wasn't allowed to do this. He said, but there are an awful lot of parents who will let their kids try to do schoolwork and try to do serious intellectual heavy lifting while they're doing three and four other things at the time. And so you're just inculcating attention deficit, kind of distraction disorder there, because that the human brain wasn't made to do that. And then he made another very interesting point. He said, you know, we praise it on the one hand when it comes to how they can juggle so many things at once. And then when they take the test and do poorly, we say, well, they weren't doing it so well. Very interesting point. You know, Linda, I will tell you, as a theologian as well as an educator and as a pastor, a preacher, I have to tell you, I know you're right. It takes time to think through certain things. It takes reflection. It takes silence. It takes the kind of intellectual space that you don't get by being constantly in communication. Down in my library where I study, my phone doesn't work well. The walls are so thick, it's very difficult for the cell signal to actually get through. I find that a refuge of sorts. And we all need, whether physically or by the boundaries we set, we need some very important space in our lives where the digital technologies simply can't intrude. And I think we also need to just discipline ourselves. I find it very difficult sometimes not to go check for data when I should actually be having a real-life conversation. Let's go to Patty calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Patty.
Good evening, Dr. Moeller. I recently took a class. It was a two-day class, and then the homework, if you will, was in a group on Facebook. Every Monday they would post a statement or a question, and by Friday we had to not only respond to that question, but to two other people's responses to that question. And it was very interesting and kept the class interaction going. But it still lacks something, you know, the human interaction with it.
Yeah.
Missing.
You know, Patty, I think the point you raise is really interesting because I know that this is the way of the future in education, blending learning media and social media. No doubt that's the future. There is a great gain, tremendous gain, the kind of gain that comes by being able to be in communication and write and see and hear. But as you say, there's a loss, too. And you know, calculating that loss is really a part of our challenge. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Good discussion. And it's just a reminder to us of the necessity of putting boundaries in place and putting social media in perspective. It's easy to see the problem when you have this anecdote. It really strikes me. The 17-year-old boy called into the vice principal's office because he was caught texting during class. And as the principal's telling him, you should listen to the teacher, not play around with your cell phone, the kid nods politely, and then and only then does the vice principal notice he's texting about being reprimanded for texting. And we look at that and we say, 17-year-old lost his mind. 17-year-old out of control, 17-year-old without proper perspective. And obviously, by the way, that's true. And God bless that vice principal for simply taking the phone away. When you have someone who has lost perspective and doesn't know the proper boundaries, you take it away. And one of the things, parents, I want to say to you is that we do need to solve our own problems. Rather than just point the finger at the younger generation, we need to recognize we better make sure we're working on the boundaries in our own lives, that we're protecting our own souls, that we're giving ourselves to the things we know are more important in terms of flesh and blood relationships, in terms of real life conversation, in terms of the life of the Christian in reading and studying the scripture and in prayer. We know that those things are priorities, and while we're working on that in our own lives, realize we're also parents, and we are put here by God to create boundaries where boundaries do not yet exist. And I hope, parents, if nothing else, you are shocked by hearing some of this. I love the call. You know, here you've got Stacy, a dental hygienist, who can't even clean a teenager's teeth because of the teenager's addiction to social media, and the parent, the mom, is sitting right there in the next chair. Several things we talk about on this program. Number one, set the boundary. Sometimes that boundary means you decide where the cell phone is and you declare, you know, digital free hours, and you make certain your teenager is not sleeping with the cell phone on the pillow. There are other things, of course. You need the security access code. You need to be looking at those text messages. I know right now there are people who are saying that's an invasion of privacy. Hey, you're paying the bill. This is your child. You would want to know what's going on in his or her life, I certainly hope, and you'd want to protect them where they need to be protected. And let me tell you, it'll be a revelation in terms of what you see sometimes coming from the friends of your teenager, a young person. Be aware that the responsibility here is not just as they are accountable to you, but also the husband and wives are accountable to each other. There is no one in this digital wild, wild west who is safe alone. It is a dangerous world out there. On the other hand, it's a world of tremendous possibility. The connectedness, like every technology, comes with great promise, but also with a price. Let's keep thinking about how to put all that in perspective. I'll meet you next time for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.